Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host, welcoming our friend, and I mean that quite sincerely, our friend, Scott Wieman, who comes by from time to time, the founder and director of Catholic in Recovery, which you can find out all about at their website, catholicinrecovery.com. Scott is the author of the book, The 12 Steps and the Sacraments, A Catholic Journey Through Recovery. First of all, welcome, Scott.
Great to be here.
Thanks for coming back.
Pleasure.
Have you had another baby? It seems like every time I see you, But the weird thing is, it's not just that you have another baby, but all of a sudden the baby is 2 years old. And I guess I just go a long time without seeing you, and then there's another child. But how many are we up to now?
We have two.
Two. Okay. Yes. All right. And the youngest?
5 months old.
Oh, that's what it was. Okay. So the 5 month old surprised me. Yeah. And you like them?
Yeah, we're going to keep them.
You're going to? Okay, that's a good. Yeah. Did it take a long time to make that decision?
No.
You made it while they're still in diapers. Wait till they're teenagers. Okay. See if you want to revisit that. I'm only kidding teenagers out there. I'm only joking. There's nothing better in the world than a teenager. Our number is 888-318-7884. And as you can guess by the title of Scott's book, The 12 Steps and the Sacraments, A Catholic Journey Through Recovery, we are going to talk about addiction and recovery this hour. Something Scott knows well, both from personal experience and from long being a worker in the vineyard of healing and recovery for people, is for folks who struggle with addiction, whether they are in recovery or they are not in recovery, is it true to say the holidays are kind of a particularly hard time?
I would say so. Yeah. I mean, I think that there's just, different challenges and expectations. And I'll use that word a lot probably this hour, of expectations.
Okay, yeah.
Around, you know, what it's supposed to be like. I think we have this tendency to think that the holidays brings out like the worst in us, which I think that's a very unfair assessment. I think that the holidays brings out high expectations in us, and our expectations that we're going to be well, that everyone around us is going to be well, that circumstances will be well.
Yeah.
And I think that, especially during this time of Advent, that really points to this, we're expecting something, right?
Right.
And I think that we probably fuel our energy toward, you know, making arrangements, personal, social, family level, and things like that. While, you know, I think a lot of that expectation, what we're really expecting is the coming of Christ. And so we can funnel a lot of that energy, I think, in various different ways.
Right.
And, you know, getting honest with ourselves and getting, you know, just that step one, you know, identifying our need for a Savior, that we're powerless over many things, is a pretty good place to start this holiday season.
It is a good place to start. I imagine, though, people have so many different family histories that come with the holidays. This year, it's the COVID-19. Am I going to get to go home, or do I have to deal with the uncle who disagrees with me on the COVID? Because everybody's, of course, because we're Americans, we have to fight about everything. We're fighting about masks, and we're fighting about it, you know. And I suppose in so many ways those fights are productive, and I don't want to make fun of people for it, but, you know, it's the holidays, and a lot of people actually dread it. Mm-hmm. And so this adds to the burden of the holiday.
Yeah, absolutely. It's different this year. You know, oftentimes it's this time of year where people are kind of gearing up towards family gatherings that might provide some challenges, you know, some people that we don't see often. And this year it's people kind of gearing up and maybe grieving the fact that they're not going to be with family. And so there's a different kind of level of things. We had Thanksgiving last week, which provides kind of really kicks off this season, of course. And even just in recovery meetings last week, and I get, you know, spend a lot of time with individuals who are finding recovery from addictions, as well as family members who are impacted by their loved ones' addictions. And that provides a different set of challenges as well. And, you know, a lot of times we talk about setting really healthy boundaries for ourselves, especially as family members impacted by loved ones. And, you know, when I come on the show, it's oftentimes family members that are calling in, you know, kind of seeking what can we do to help and support the loved one I care about. And, you know, oftentimes we have to make some kind of challenging decisions for ourselves and for our family members. I was cleaning out a storage bin the other day and came across some artifacts that I kept. My wife was suggesting that I clean out some things in the garage, and a lot of things that had just been carrying around for too long. But as I was cleaning this out, I found a little card from my mom or my stepmom and my dad probably 15 years ago when I was in the throes of my addiction. And it was this card that said something along the lines of, We're doing this because we love you and we trust you. We have faith in you. We know you're courageous. We know that you're strong. And it was, you know, and we're also setting a limit this holiday season. And, you know, there's going to be some expectations and some boundaries. And here's what they are. And in the time, I couldn't get that. You know, I felt like I was being abandoned. I felt like I was, you know, like everyone was kind of abandoning me. Now, I was also, you know, in the throes of addiction. rooted in right. extreme self-centeredness. And so we're just prone in that state to be, to feel like people are abandoning us, regardless of whether they're taking important, healthy actions. But, you know, oftentimes the disease of addiction, which manifests itself in all sorts of different ways, alcoholism, drug addiction, compulsive overeating, restricted eating, gambling, sex, you name it, oftentimes puts us in this place of victimhood where, you know, that kind of makes personal relationships challenging with friends or family. So so I look back on this time, and now I look at this card from 12, 15 years ago and thinking, I get it. Like, I get it. I get why they had to set this boundary. I understand why this was communicated in a way, but I couldn't see that long ago. Now, and also at the same time, that helped me. You know, it's kind of created this, like, we trust you. We know you can do this, and we're not going to be putting up with your BS anymore, really. It was what kind of, there was an underlying message of that as well.
Your wife didn't make you throw that out.
No.
Okay, good. All right. I just want to make sure, because that's really mean if she makes you throw that card out. Our number is 888-318-7884. Maybe you'd like some help or advice for yourself or a family member. If it's for yourself, that you are perfectly welcome to call, and I think you will find a sympathetic and helpful ear here in Scott Wieman. And you're not going to shock us or upset us. But if it's for a family member or a family situation, you're welcome to call as well. 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884. We're talking about addiction and recovery through a Catholic perspective this hour. Scott is the author of The 12 Steps and the Sacraments, A Journey Through Recovery, and the founder of Catholic in Recovery, which you can find at catholicinrecovery.com. Say something to me about the sacraments then, because it's awful, but people can't get to the sacraments now. And you are really committed to this idea that the sacraments can be and are intended to be a part of your healing.
Absolutely. A very important part of it. As Catholics, we get so, you know, we have Catholic in recovery, we overlap the spiritual wisdom of the 12 steps with the sacramental life of the church and see a lot of the movement of the 12 steps in alignment with the movement of the sacramental life as well. And yes, it's unfortunate that, you know, the reconciliation opportunities limited, opportunities to receive the Eucharist limited, our daily bread. You know, this is really what is, step 11 suggests that we maintain conscious contact with God as we understand Him through prayer and meditation.
Yeah.
And as Catholics, you know, the summit of our experience with conscious contact with God is through the Eucharist. And it's very unfortunate that that's unavailable in many ways. And hopefully it creates a greater hunger for that. You know, I think that hunger, Mother Teresa, of course, puts it in words of, I thirst. Yeah. And that thirsting, you know, oftentimes it's really filling that God-shaped hole in our hearts with things that are not of God. And that thirsting for, if we just take a time, a moment throughout this Advent season to pause, find some stillness and some quiet, and really ask ourselves, what is it that I'm thirsting for? You know, I might be searching, going all over the place, you know, finding some means of some freedom, some sanity, some serenity, but what is it that I'm really looking for? And, you know, where am I seeking it? You know, oftentimes that's done through, you know, alcohol, drugs, a variety of different compulsive behaviors that might bring some happiness or, you know, some at least short-term pleasure.
Right.
But at the same time, creating long-term consequences.
888-318-7884, the number lines beginning to fill up. There are still, it's four lines open. You can call 888-318-7884. I am going to take a break. And when I come back from the break, I wonder if you could help me by just, because I know there are folks listening now who are themselves maybe in the hard part of their own addiction. Mm-hmm. And maybe you could address them directly about God's love mm-hmm. and about the possibility experienced in your own life of genuine and real healing.
Absolutely.
We'll do that when we come back. We'll take a quick break. You're welcome to call 888-31-TRUTH if you have a question. We're talking about addiction and healing and from a Catholic point of view with our friend Scott Wieman. Right back after this.
We're here for you. Give us a call today on Catholic Answers Live.
Hi, this is Cy Kellett. Don't forget to check out the latest episode of our podcast, Catholic Answers Focus. You can listen each week to the world's premier podcast on Catholic apologetics at CatholicAnswersFocus.com or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Catholic Answers Focus, now available at CatholicAnswersFocus.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
How should we pray? The disciples asked our Lord that question, and he gave them the Our Father, or the Lord's Prayer. But he also gave them the liturgy, which is the most privileged form of prayer in the Catholic tradition, especially the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass. We can pray with the whole church in the liturgy of the hours, or the Divine Office, and we should also pray in our own private room, our secret chamber, as Jesus says, and then our Father who sees us in secret will reward us.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Our guest is Scott Wieman. We're talking about addiction and recovery this hour. From a Catholic perspective, there are some things that, I mean, this is another area, we say this all the time on this show, but this is another area where it's true of the Catholic faith. The Catholic Church accepts everything that's true. Mm-hmm. So you can talk about addiction from a Catholic perspective, and that includes the science of addiction and the lived experience of addicts who have recovered, and it includes the revelation of God's love and the sacraments. So I said I wanted you to address, if you would, directly, the person who might themselves be in the throes of their addiction right now, with your own words, what you would say to them.
Yeah, really appreciate that opportunity too. Having many experienced, you know, many people reaching out to us with similar situation, either, you know, just admitting, you know, this, I need help, which is an important first step and an important part of the process. For me, I was trying to hide so long, you know, kind of the truth, really the reality of my life. You know, and it was clear, it was apparent to those who were close to me, the consequences, the lost relationships, the lost jobs, education opportunities that were thrown away, really. You know, of course, DUIs and other, you know, offenses and things like that. And, you know, it took a profound shift in many ways. It wasn't, you know, and the people in my life were speaking to me in a very loving and caring way, you know, for suggesting, you know, can't you just slow down, Scott, or you got so many good reasons to stop drinking, or at least just, you know, limit yourself a little bit. And you know, in many of the instances of my drug use and such, that was kind of behind closed doors. So there was some secrecy to it. But, you know, the consequences of that secrecy wasn't really a secret. It was clear that I needed help. And, what happened was, you know, I just rock bottom fell out. You know, I kind of, the rock bottom for me was actually, you know, people ask, what is rock bottom? How do we define rock bottom? Well, rock bottom is when we stop digging. And it's when we stop digging, put the shovel down and stop digging. And, you know, oftentimes that means looking up into this big abyss and it looks, you know, if we're deep in the hole. We need help. But you know what? There is a chain of people who have made their way out of the pit and who are still, you know, holding one person below them and reaching up above them, grabbing onto the person in front of them.
Yeah.
And a long link of individuals who are there to help and who want to help.
Right.
All it takes is for us to put down the shovel and stop digging. And so for me, it was a profound shift when I found a recovery group where, you know, which I went into kind of thinking, you know, this isn't really going to work. I'm terminally unique. My problems are different than anyone else's. You know, I was in many ways just kind of hearing the differences. It was impressed upon me to start listening to the similarities in the stories of people who are sharing in those groups and in those meetings. I mean, the first thing you got to do is show up to a meeting or a group. But what happens then is profound. It's profound change. It's, you know, oftentimes it takes just a little bit of courage or that lot of bit of courage to overcome fear and shame of, am I really supposed to be here? Are these really my people? You know, for me, I got to the bottom of a stairwell day one of sobriety. And I heard it was 7 a.m. early morning meeting. I was not used to being up that morning, that early. But I could hear in this Protestant church above me, as the meeting was held on the second floor, I could hear laughter and camaraderie before the meeting had gotten started. And I thought to myself, if these people know anything about what I'm going through right now, there's no reason they would be laughing about anything. But what I found, I got up into that room. I sat down probably in the back corner of the room. And, you know, I had been a victim. I felt a victim of my alcoholism. Everyone else was announcing themselves as alcoholics in this victorious way that they and God together yes, I'm an alcoholic, but proclaiming it in a way that has this freedom behind it, I found new life behind it. And so, you know, and then what happened after that meeting, I don't remember much of the context of that meeting, but I do remember a man from across the room darting across the room, looking me in the eyes and saying, I know exactly how you feel. You don't ever have to drink again. And,
wow.
And that's a profound, those five words, I know how you feel, those are big words. That's a little bit different than the way that I was being spoken to before from my very loving and very, you know, caring friends and family members.
Right.
But it was someone being able to speak from this place of experience that says, I know how you feel, that seemed to cut through all of my denial and all of shame that I felt of this, like, it's okay. It's going to be okay. And actually, you know, he would often say to me things like, he was kind of this Yoda-ish figure. He would say to me, Scott, you're not okay, and I'm not okay, and that's okay.
Isn't that great? Nobody has a collection of helpful phrases like a recovering alcoholic.
Exactly.
I guess it comes from the meetings, probably.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of spiritual wisdom in those meetings.
And it's shared, and which is such a gift that, you know, we're just such an individualistic society, but you don't really make progress on your own.
Yeah, that's the challenge. I think oftentimes people kind of come seeking some sources of, how can I do this on my own?
Yeah.
How can I just maybe get in the room one-on-one with a therapist and take care of this?
Right.
The therapist is probably going to tell you that you need to find individuals who have a similar condition as you do,
and
that's how you're going to find change. They're going to help with a lot of things. I'm a therapist myself. I strongly endorse it. And you can't do this on your own. You need others.
Yeah.
I found another kind of spiritual wisdom that my Yoda sensei sponsor shared with me is, you know, we would work after the meetings, we would go to a coffee shop and spend a few hours together working through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and the Bible. We would kind of have one here and one here, and we're cross-referencing the other. He'd hold up the Bible in one hand and the big book in the other hand, and referring to the Bible, say, this book is for people who have no intention of ever going to hell. This book, referring to the big book, is for people who have been there and have no intention of ever going back.
Praise God. How beautiful. Yeah. I have a million questions now thank you for sharing, and thank you very, very much. But I don't want to ask my questions because there's a million people on the line. But I really do have a whole bunch of follow-ups. So I'm going to come back to you. We start with an anonymous caller, and that's fine. If you want to be anonymous today, you are welcome to be anonymous. Let's go to Wisconsin. You ever been there?
It's my home state.
I thought so. Listening on 88.5 FM WFSI. Anonymous, thank you so much for your call. Go ahead with your question.
Hi.
Hi.
Yes, we are a family member, so I really related to your story, finding this card from your parents, because we've been there, and I can relate to absolutely everything you have been saying all along. So we've had to set some boundaries, and then we have a son we have a recovering alcoholic son. He's done very well, found his healing and recovery with AA, and another son that has been just fighting it and in denial. And I wonder, too, what more can we do? And we've had family counseling as well, and finally, we set some boundaries, just like apparently your parents did, and that's been very helpful for my husband and I, but now that son is kind of throwing it back on us again, saying, you're abandoned me. Like you said, the self-centeredness that's involved with addiction is unbelievable, and it comes from hurting, and I know that, but I just said to our family counselor, I said, what does rock bottom look like? I thought we've been there many times before.
Yeah.
So,
Scott, can you give some response?
Yeah. Well, thanks for calling and for sharing. I can hear your love and I can hear your pain. And it's a challenging place to be, especially this time of year when, you know, during the holidays when we want things to be well. And I'm curious if you've had a chance to connect with other people who have had family members who struggle with addiction and have been able to kind of find a healing yourself.
Right. We actually, my daughter and I, we went to what we thought was an Al-Anon meeting, and it was a defunct Al-Anon meeting. So we haven't done that yet. But we've had what you said about with the holidays, and I think we're on a positive again. We've had so many positive starts, and then everything goes downhill. But just the negativity that comes with the disease, where he said, "Why can't everyone around me know that I'm struggling and stop drinking around me?" Well, that's kind of narcissistic, I think. And we try, but not the extended family, and then everything goes backwards again. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll try. Our counselor has said she's to be careful about the Al-Anon. Sometimes you can get with a good group, and sometimes you can get with sort of a not-so-good group. So,
yeah, Scott? I don't want to speak for that. I would just say, you know, suggest trying a whole bunch of different options. Also want to recommend checking out Catholic in Recovery. We have groups for family members impacted by a loved one's addiction. And so CatholicInRecovery.com, you'll see our full virtual meeting schedule. Actually, at this moment, we have a group going on that's meeting for family and friends impacted by a loved one's addiction. And some very important, really guiding principles that help lead that group and connect people with others. Shared practices on how we can, you know, set boundaries while doing that in a loving way. And it's not even so much about setting boundaries. It's just about having really an attitude of being separate but hopeful, and separate in being that, you know, just like that letter that I mentioned that my parents wrote a few years ago. You know, said we believe in you. You're strong. You're courageous. You know, you can do this. We don't need to be doing this for you. And so a lot of it is just not stepping in to do what he can do for himself. And, you know, being around other people who are doing the same thing, who are in a similar position, is vital, because that's a really challenging thing to do. It's shifting. So what you're describing, and I think what you're describing, is really kind of also details how the holidays can be a little bit challenging with family gatherings. And some people, you know, when we're with our smaller, closer family, sometimes, you know, people kind of know what's going on, are willing to, you know, set aside drinking for the evening, for the night. But not always the case when we're in a larger extended family. Because, you know, there may be others who you know, if we're implicated as an alcoholic or an addict, then, you know, and other people in our family drink in a similar fashion, then what are we saying about them, or what are they saying about themselves? Or, you know, I think there's some assumed we're all kind of pushing our responsibility away in some way. So it's a messy situation.
But you know what? When I hear Anonymous talking as a mother, it really is something for a parent to be the child of an alcoholic or an otherwise addicted child, in that there's a kind of social discomfort that comes with that for them too, that they have to live with a kind of shame. Where, like, if you're a parent of a kid who has, you know, develops heart disease or cancer or something like that, people are going to make you casseroles and come over to the house. But if your child is an alcoholic, they don't want to. They're going to avoid talking about it. They're going to avoid you. So it's a really hurtful thing.
Yeah, I think the same kind of shame and pride that we might feel on an individual level,
right,
is also assumed on a family level. It's also assumed on a community level, and it's even assumed on a global level. I think that even as our church, if we, you know, we can extract this same kind of idea and blow it up into some of the challenges that we face as a church in some ways, and some of our inability to want to really face some challenging truths.
Yeah.
And when some of those leak out, right, we get defensive, and we're just ashamed. And it's not necessarily our responsibility, but we're associated, and so we feel some level of shame in that. And so even on a family level, that happens. And Anonymous, I really, really appreciate your sharing. What it sounds like is a roller coaster. I mean, it's a roller coaster. And that's exactly what you're describing, too. There's some hopeful opportunities. We get really excited. Things are going to be better. And then the fall comes. And so really the best piece of advice, and this is a little bit vague, but is to not get on the roller coaster. Is just stay on solid ground, knowing that roller coaster is going to come by, and it's going to come by to the gate. And, you know, I'm here at the gate. If you'd like to exit, feel free. I'm here for you. I'm right here.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if you want to go take another round, go for it. But I'm not going to get on the roller coaster with you. You don't have to jump on the roller coaster with you. It's really hard, especially when
you can see how it would be very profitable to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just because you're for your own sanity to get off. Anonymous, thank you. Let's go to Alma in Indiana, listening on Redeemer Radio on 95.7 FM. Delighted to have you, Alma. Go ahead with your question for Scott Wieman.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was calling because I've been married for 20 years. And you know, at the beginning, I noticed that my husband drank, you know, when he got home from work, and didn't think of, you know, anything about it. And, you know, then years went by, and it just, you know, it gets a little more and a little more. And it just gotten really bad in the last several years. And it's something we have talked about it, you know, and he's always, at the beginning at least, it was promising, oh, yeah, I'm not going to drink anymore, or, you know, always promising that he wasn't going to do it, and just to come back the next day and, you know, he will drink again. And we tried going to retreats at church, and our priest suggested where he can call, you know, a group where he could call, and he went one day. So at least for some time, like, he tried.
Alma, I'm only interrupting you because we have to do this break. But it it seems clear where this is headed, and I think Scott can be helpful to you. Scott Wieman, our guest, is the author of The 12 Steps and the Sacraments, Journey Through Recovery, and the founder of Catholic in Recovery, which you can find at catholicinrecovery.com. We'll be right back with his answer for Alma and more conversation.
Catholic Answers Live. We're here for you.
To many people, even many Christians, purgatory is a fantasy, or worse, a wicked lie invented by the church to make salvation complicated and keep people in fear. But I'm here to tell you that purgatory is fact, not fiction. The Bible supports it, Christians have historically believed in it, and it makes theological sense. In my new book, Purgatory is for Real, I provide the evidence and reasoning to help you understand this controversial doctrine and demonstrate how it's actually a joyful, hopeful reality, not something shadowy and mysterious, but a sign of God's love and mercy. To get your copy of Purgatory is for Real, visit shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
If you spend any time on Twitter, Facebook, or mainstream media, you're probably familiar with the litany of slogans that skeptics employ to rescue you from the foolish belief that God exists. The constant onslaught seems to leave people with the idea that they have no alternative but to embrace atheism. How can a Christian respond? In One Less God Than You, John DeRosa breaks down 20 of the most common atheist challenges and shows you how to craft effective answers. Atheism is more aggressive and widespread than ever. Read One Less God Than You and prepare yourself to respond with the joyful truth that God is real. To get your copy of One Less God Than You, visit shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Tomorrow on More to Life, Identity Theft.
Are people undermining your identity as a child of God? Time to reclaim your dignity.
That's tomorrow on More to Life. Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. As we approach in America we call the holidays, but it's okay to say the holidays. It comes from the word holy day, and that's what Christmas Eve is, and Christmas Day, and the first day of the year, Great Marian Feast, and the Epiphany and all that. So it's okay to say the holidays, but the holidays are tough on a lot of us. And those who suffer with or have a family member suffering with addiction, whether that person is in recovery or not, it's a very difficult time. And so we have our good friend Scott Wieman here, the founder and director of Catholic in Recovery and the author of The 12 Steps and the Sacraments, A Catholic Journey Through Recovery, which has all kinds of really impressive people have said this is a great book. Among them, Patrick Coffin.
That's right.
Yeah. The great host of Catholic Answers.
Yeah, he was
prior to me.
Yes,
everybody likes better than me, but I don't want to talk about that. It's very self-centered. But I'm sorry, bringing my own problems into this. When we had to take a break, Alma in Indiana, listening on Redeemer Radio, calling about her husband, to whom she has been married for 20 years, and seems to be an alcoholic who can't find his way to recovery. Is that a good way of summing that up, Alma?
Yes, it is. It just has gotten actually pretty, you know, pretty bad. There's no communication. You know, every time I talk about it, it ends up bad. Like you know, I heard him saying that, or Chris saying that they play the victim, and that that's always the case. I mean, he never actually, you know, accept that what's the problem. You know, it's always blaming me or other things and or other situations, but it does never end well.
So you'd like some advice on Scott about what you can do now. Is that, am I right?
Yes.
Okay. Scott, can you help?
Yeah, I would. I mean, I'm going to give this advice to any family member that calls, but I would suggest connecting with others who have family members who are also addicts, whether in recovery or still active in addiction. And that can be found in a variety of different forums. I would suggest checking out CatholicInRecovery.com. We have family and friends recovery meetings on Wednesdays at 7 Eastern, 4 Pacific, and Fridays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific time, and connecting with others who are going to be able to provide a understanding of where you're at. Because what I imagine is that you feel like nobody understands where you're at. You try to maybe explain it to some friends or some family members, but they don't truly understand it. While also caring for your husband, you want to protect him, and you don't want to you want to protect his namesake, and you know, I can imagine this feels very, very isolating for you. And so what I'm suggesting is that connecting with others who have been in a similar position or who are in a similar position will help relieve the burden that you're feeling on yourself. Because I can hear it. You're feeling responsible. You're probably feeling responsible for getting him sober, which you have no power over. There's no way that you can do that, just like no more than I can get him sober or anyone else can get him sober. Well, really, truly, only God can get him sober. And so there are some opportunities. Of course, it sounds like there have been some moments of willingness on his part. And so I would try to align, stand by his side during those times, not doing what he can do for himself, but providing encouragement and love. And also clear expectations. And I think that by providing expectations and sitting down, oftentimes having those really challenging conversations which must be had when he's sober, can provide a really, you know, I know that it's a hard thing to do, especially with years and years of this going on, but just sitting down and sharing where you're at can be a very healthy and important opportunity, or like something that needs to happen. And set some, you know, have a conversation about what you expect from him.
Alma, how does all that sit with you?
Yeah, I know I just have to keep trying. I mean, I get really frustrated and, you know, I sometimes feel like, you know, I can't.
When you say keep trying,
anymore,
Alma, I'm just going to pause you. When you say you need to keep trying what?
Well, talking to him, you know, I don't know. I can see it is really hard for him, but you know, sometimes I feel I'm the one that's trying to make things right, you know, and he's not trying. I mean, he tried for a little bit and then he just is to a point where he's just not doing anything.
Yeah, what am I
doing? I can see it's hard because his dad.
Alma, allow me. I'll probably suggest. I imagine that he's probably trying really hard. And alcoholism is cunning, baffling, and powerful. And it has probably a grip on him that neither he nor any human power can overcome. And so it certainly needs God. God needs to be present there. And you know, you cannot do that for him. And it sounds like you're trying really, really hard, which probably gives him the understanding that he doesn't really need to try that hard. He's got someone that's trying hard for him anyways, so there's probably not a ton of motivation or incentive for him to do anything. What I would start trying hard is for you to find peace in your own life and try to find the healing from the family disease of addiction, because addiction does not just impact one person in a vacuum. Instead, it impacts everyone around, and we shift roles within a family system, and of course, we're also hurt, and that impacts other relationships that you have outside of your relationship with your husband. So try to find some healing for yourself and give him the willingness and the confidence that he can do it, but don't be fighting his battle for him. Only he can.
CatholicInRecovery.com is where where you can go. I want to just tell you some folks on the on our Facebook feed talking about Catholic in Recovery, and you called the meeting. The Holly here on Facebook says family and friends meeting.
Yep.
And so Alma, I really want to encourage you again, as Scott already has, and other people on the internet are encouraging you. Try out a family and friends meeting at CatholicInRecovery.com. You can talk freely there. With other people who are experiencing similar situations, really, mm-hmm. and the same kind of cycles.
Yep.
Alma, thanks. I really, really appreciate it. I hope you will visit CatholicInRecovery.com and check out those family and friends meetings that so many are advising here. Our number is 888-318-7884. I will tell you right now, there are a lot of folks on the line, and we're going to try to get to as many as we can, but we have to do so in a way that is helpful and sensitive to those who call. Let's go to Frida in Carson, Nevada next. Frida, thank you for joining us. Go ahead with your question for Scott Wieman.
I have a difficult situation with a son of mine who has drug addiction problems.
Okay.
And for the last 2 years, he has been badgering me over the cell phone by texting. He will not. And he'll call my phone and hang up. He won't talk to me in person. He won't come and see me, but he demands money and says that, and he'll make up lies and stories saying that something's happened to my grandson or something's happened to the new baby that's born, or they have to pay rent, or he's paying for a program. And the badgering has gotten to a point where I am now feeling physical strain as well as emotional strain. Like I get chest pain and things like that. And I don't know what to do anymore. I've written letters to him to say, I know you can do this. I know you can change your way of life. I know you can break this habit, this addiction, but nothing seems to work. Mm. And I pray every day.
Yeah. Sorry to hear you're going through that, Frida, and I'm sorry to hear your son's going through that, and the whole family, including your grandchildren, are all impacted by that. Addiction does not happen in a vacuum. Frida, I'm curious, when he asks for money and provides stories, which it sounds like you have a pretty good idea that they're fictitious, do you typically give him money?
Sometimes I do. I pay rent and buy food and things like that because if his girlfriend calls or sends me a message, and she can be very panicky. Like one time they claimed, I don't know if it was true or not, that somebody had taken her and the baby and were holding them until they got the money they needed.
Okay. So what would happen if you did not give him the money in moments like that?
It's a constant badgering for days. He doesn't stop.
Okay.
Until he gets what he wants.
And so usually he badgers until you give in?
Yes. And I mean, this can go on for weeks.
Yeah.
He doesn't stop until I finally give in and just can't take it anymore.
What would it be like to have a conversation with him that began something along the lines of, unless you're calling to get help, I'm not going to answer the phone?
He cusses me out and tells me I don't know what I'm talking about and it's all my fault.
Okay. And that's not true, right?
Right.
Is it your fault?
It is not true.
And is it?
It is not my fault.
No, it's right. Not. You did not cause this. You can't control this. And unfortunately, you can't cure this. But people can. And help can be made possible. My suggestion would be how to have some kind of a conversation that has some limits around it, much like what I just suggested. This was the way that my sponsor found help. And he, a man who, you know, among the people that I look up to is among the greatest in my eyes. And although he was at rock bottom long ago when his family wanted nothing to do with him, and his dad told him exactly that. Said, unless you're calling to get help, I'm not going to answer the phone. That's just not what I'm going to do. And so, he had nothing left in his life. Relationships gone, job gone, everything left except for his golf clubs. He's a scratch golfer, so he had his golf clubs. And he made a call to his dad one day after asking God to take his life from him, which ended up not happening. But really, actually, God gave him a new life. And he called his father and he said, Dad, or in the words that he heard on the phone, and I tell the story in my book, were exactly that. Son, unless you're calling to get help right now, I'm gonna hang up this phone. And it was a call that saved his life. He went to treatment, and then, 30 years later or so, is saving the lives of many people like myself. And so, you know, unfortunately, we are not our own savior. We are not anyone else's savior. But Jesus Christ, who is our savior, can help. We just need to allow him. And too oftentimes, I think we get busy. We get busy trying to appease someone in the moment or dealing with a situation at hand that's, you know, badgering and it's just constant. But, you know, oftentimes even, and as the parent, as the adult, as the rational person, we need to set down those boundaries. And that starts by you recognizing that you did not cause this. And so when he comes back at you and says, you're the reason that I'm drinking, it's all your fault. Well, that's not true. That's the disease of alcoholism and addiction speaking to you.
Frida, God bless you, sister. I hope that that's helpful to you. And I will suggest to you, as we have to others, to visit CatholicInRecovery.com. Maybe the family and friends meeting would be appropriate for Frida
Absolutely.
As well.
Absolutely.
Frida, thank you so much. And I know that by your call, you've helped many other people who are having the same experience too.
Mm-hmm, thank you.
We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with more of our conversation about addiction and recovery with the man who founded and now runs Catholic in Recovery, Scott Wieman.
You're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
The Aquinas Writing Advantage Program is part of Homeschool Connections' set of online courses for your Catholic homeschool. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
Have you ever been so grief-stricken and so heartsick that you can't see God? You can't see God in the tragedy. You can't see God in that cross. You can't see God in that sin. Why? You're enveloped in that grief. You're enveloped in fear. And God is out the window. You don't see Him standing right next to you.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
A lot of people think that street evangelization involves yelling out of a bullhorn telling people that they're going to hell. Not so with St. Paul's Street Evangelization. Our methods are non-confrontational and effective. We simply offer information on the Catholic faith along with rosaries, miraculous medals, and prayer. Pope Francis wrote about how beautiful it is to see street preachers joyfully bringing Jesus to every corner of the earth. Street evangelization is fun and fruitful. Join us today at streetevangelization.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Scott Wieman is our guest. I want to recommend to you again the book that the man himself, Patrick Coffin, has blurbed on the back of the book. The 12 Steps and the Sacraments, A Catholic Journey Through Recovery. Scott Wieman is the author. He is our guest this hour. He's also the founder of Catholic in Recovery, which you can find at CatholicInRecovery.com. Kind of a strange serendipitous thing happened this year with the COVID that you were forced to do more virtual meetings, and you have found that the virtual meetings are reaching people who could not otherwise have been reached.
Absolutely, yes. It's been something that we've wanted to do. This has propelled us to make it happen much quicker. And we're reaching people from all over the world, really, that are coming to various... We've got Catholic in Recovery meetings throughout the week, Monday through Sunday,
uh-huh.
A variety of different types of a meeting, general recovery meetings for those with a variety of addictions, compulsions, and unhealthy attachments.
Yeah.
Family and friends meetings, as we've discussed before,
right.
And three men's lust addiction recovery meetings. Adding a women's lust addiction recovery meeting soon, as lust addiction, as we may hear in a moment, is not just a men's issue. I think too oftentimes we do a disservice to women by, in the church, kind of framing that issue, lust, sexual addiction, as just being a primarily men's issue, which it is not. And by doing so, further alienates those who struggle with as women, with lust addiction and are seeking help. So we are hoping to be on the front lines of providing that kind of help and those resources.
888-318-7884, the number. Another anonymous caller. And by the way, you are very welcome to call anonymously today, of course, as we talk about addiction and recovery from watching on YouTube Live. Anonymous, your question for Scott Wieman.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Great. Hi, I'm calling... I'm 20 years old. I'm in college. I'm dating someone, and we both have histories of kind of addictive behavior. And for me, it was, in my case, it was pornography, and in her case, it was like hooking up and drinking and that kind of thing. And we're sometimes I see the effects of that still here. And so what I'm focusing on here is the healing. And I'm wondering how, specifically, my question, how can we best maintain chastity when we're kind of like, we're both hurting, we're both like frustrating, and then we make amends. We make amends with each other, and then our inclination is to seek comfort in each other. How can we love each other better in that situation?
God bless you, Anonymous. Thank you for that question.
Mm-hmm. Great question. Thank you. And one that I think that many people struggle with, Christian or non-Christian. And I think that, you know, we can answer this in kind of a larger scope too, perhaps to just kind of speak to many experiences that might be related to this. But what happens when people are trying to seek recovery themselves and are in a relationship with someone who is going through their own healing themselves? And perhaps that relationship might make it challenging for the individual to find their own personal healing.
Right.
Ooh, it's a challenging question. Of course, something that requires, I would suggest, the counsel of a sponsor. You know, if you're not in recovery or don't have a sponsor or a mentor in that capacity, you know, that's why you call Catholic Answers Live. So, what I might suggest is, I mean, it's often suggested in recovery that one waits until they are a year sober before getting involved in a new relationship. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that we need to end whatever relationship we enter recovery with, but as far as romantic relationships, that can be challenging. Now, what also can happen in recovery meetings is that two people who are both kind of on the cusp of finding some healing but also very deeply wounded kind of find unity in each other, as Anonymous mentioned, you know, find some kind of comfort in really...
In the
unity.
Shared,
yes.
Yeah, but also in the shared addiction, really, or the shared compulsion.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, there's a vulnerability there. There's a means to really get honest. You know, we get very honest in recovery meetings with each other, and so that can really fuel some intimacy outside of meetings. But it doesn't have to be romantic intimacy, certainly. It can be intimacy between, you know, men or, you know, two men or two women. And there's just the love of Christ makes us intimate, and I think that this vulnerable sharing does that. Now, but oftentimes, if we're in those moments, those, you know, key moments, the first 90 days of recovery, the first year, we might do ourselves a service by stepping away from that relationship for a moment, so that, you know, each individual in the relationship can find their own healing, recognizing that kind of the source of their addiction. I'm not saying that you're addicted to each other, but I'm saying that you probably provide the same a propensity to act out in your addiction. And also, what's challenging is that when we're concerned about the route that that our partner is on, you know, we're kind of trying to manage two people's recovery in some fashion, and that just that rarely works.
I see. Yeah. So you say a mentor or a sponsor, if and you mentioned the men's lust recovery groups. Can someone find that in those groups, or would you have to find it somewhere else on your own?
Absolutely. No, that's a great place. And that's the best place, really, to find someone who can, you know, from someone who's sharing experience, strength, and hope that makes sense.
Right.
Someone that seems to have what you want in some fashion.
Yeah.
That can, you know, be a mentor. But also, you know, what I'm suggesting is that someone who might be closer to this situation might be able to speak on it in a more profound way. But in a general sense, you know, when we're trying to get sober at the same time as someone who we're very close to is trying to get sober, sometimes that close relationship might need to just kind of take a break for a little while until we each find some healing and maybe come back and see if it works out. But, you know, we go through a lot of change in that first year of recovery so we might need to be making those reassessments on a regular basis. Hope that helps.
Anonymous, it seems that might be hard to hear. Does that bring any clarity for you?
Yeah, it does.
Okay.
I do have some clarification, but I don't know if you have time for that.
You want to ask a go ahead. Ask a follow-up. Go ahead.
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, what's happened is that I've been sober for 2 years, and we started dating 8 months ago. So I had been sober for about, I don't know, a year and a half, something like that, before we started dating. And whereas she had just kind of kicked it only like a month and a half or a few months. And so there's kind of a discrepancy there. And I'm wondering, like, just I thought that would be worth clarifying.
Yeah, something tells me that you know the answer to this question. You're just, and you're probably calling so that you, to not hear the answer that you don't want to hear. But I believe that you know the answer to this question in your heart, and I'll let the Holy Spirit help you discern that.
Anonymous, I'm going to leave it there because I want to try to get to at least one more caller before the hour is done. I want to remind folks who are listening, if you are in the, if you're dealing with your own addiction, whether in recovery or not yet in recovery, the book is called The 12 Steps and the Sacraments, A Catholic Journey Through Recovery. The author is our guest, Scott Wieman. And the place you can go to get information online is CatholicInRecovery.com, CatholicInRecovery.com. Let's go to our next guest. I just got to find out who that is. Hang on. John in Portland, Oregon, listening on the ancient modern day radio. Glad to have you. John, go ahead with your question.
Yeah, well, I first of all, I do want to offer encouragement to the last caller, but I think we need to keep something in mind here. If I understood correctly, he was only 20 years old, and his girlfriend was about the same age. Now, the drinking age, of course, is 21, and I think we need to ask a question as to why it is that we have so many alcohol problems within the Catholic Church. And I think part of that, as a convert to Catholicism myself, I was shocked by how many events in our churches where alcohol is served. You know, there's a men's group, Knights of Columbus. We even have a monastery that makes beer, and it's encouraged on the radio. Our Catholic radio station runs ads for them. You know, wine and cheese events after Mass. We are encouraging addiction by having alcohol in so many of these places. Theology on Tap. Why not theology with tea? You know, I volunteered on a suicide hotline for 3 years, and nearly every call was directly related to alcohol. And I think we really need to get our priorities straight. We don't need alcohol at all of our events, and we shouldn't have it.
Okay, John, I want to keep you on so you can continue this conversation. But I want to get Scott's. It seems to me a resonant accusation to some degree, having grown up Catholic myself. And there's been a lot of alcohol at Catholic events over the years.
Yeah, I grew up at Catholic by name mostly, so I haven't been around. You know, I've been around the church for 9 years now, as far as a revert, as I would be called. And I hear you. I don't want to form or express too much of an opinion on the topic. I do think that there is a, you know, there is a, you're right. I think you're making valid points. I recall even just at my own parish within the last, it was probably just before COVID. I remember asking, someone was seeking the Knights of Columbus event, and they had a handle of liquor in their hands. And it was like, what hard alcohol? Like, really? Like, can we keep it to wine or something? I can understand that leads to temptation. I think there's a prudent temperance. Probably temperance is probably the right term to use here. That we as a church, and of course on local levels, and you know, responsible people making decisions, could likely be more temperate as far as making decisions about how often we're serving alcohol at events.
Fair enough, John. Do you want to follow that up at all? We just have a few seconds, John.
Who do come to the church for spiritual help. You know, somebody who's trying not to drink, it's very hard when you have alcohol at these events. And we don't know, these people are not going to raise their hands and say, I'm sorry, I'm in recovery necessarily. They're going to possibly be tempted to drink. And I think as a service to those people whom we love in Christ, we should say no to that. We don't need alcohol at all of our events. It shouldn't be there. It's not needed. We don't need it to have fun or to grow closer to God.
Okay, John, thank you. I mean, the counter, of course, is that Christ himself turned water into wine and wasn't completely negative on alcohol, but that's not a license to just do whatever.
Yeah.
Like have unlimited alcohol flowing all the time.
Yeah, I'm going to ask God to grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference today.
You didn't make that up.
No.
I know for a fact you did not make that prayer up. Scott Wieman, I always enjoy your company. Congratulations on 2 kids.
Thank you.
12 Steps and the Sacraments is the book, A Catholic Journey Through Recovery. Scott Wieman is the author. And if you want to find out more about Scott and more about, hey, our own bishop here in San Diego blurbed the book too. I just saw that.
Will you blurb my next one?
Oh man, I'll blurb anything you want, Scott, because of who you are, but also because of who I am. I am desperate for attention. I'll do whatever you want, Scott Weeman. Visit Scott's website, CatholicInRecovery.com, CatholicInRecovery.com.